You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast episode 520.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes. Hello, Cornflake.
Oh, hello, Kevin.
Are you ready to read through some more government documents? That's our new format, right? Every week?
Right, Freedom of Information Act.
We're just going to request some documents from the Pentagon and we'll read them. We're going a different way.
But I think it's what the people want.
People love it. Absolutely. We're going to get to the bottom of everything, but not tonight. Maybe next week. Tonight, we're just going to goof around, do some random junk once again. So, how about let's start with National Whatever Day.
National Whatever Day!
Well, I have a celebrity birthday to share with you, Kevin. And I don't necessarily think of this guy as a big name in music. But can you guess what Jessica by the Allman Brothers Band, I'm Out of Tears by the Rolling Stones, and Drops of Jupiter by Train all have in common?
Those first two songs, I don't even know them by name. The third, I recognize the name. I'd know it if I heard it. So I'm relatively clueless to one extent or another about all three of the songs you just named. So I'm going to say no, I have no idea who or what we're talking about.
Well, I'm talking about Charles Lavelle. Do you know who that is?
No, this is a deep cut. I've never heard that name.
This is very much a deep cut. He's turning 70 on April 28th, and he's been with the Rolling Stones since 1982. He is the keyboardist and the musical directionalist, as he calls himself, of the band. But it's like he has a sound, kind of like how we've talked about. What are a couple of examples of, like, when you hear the piano playing, you know it's Bruce Hornsby, or when you hear the piano playing, you know who it is.
Yeah. When you hear the bassist from Loverboy,
you know exactly who you're listening to.
Sure.
I wouldn't have known about him outside of the Rolling Stones, but...
So this is not an official Rolling Stone. He's not in the official lineup of the band.
Yeah, he is. He performs with them on tour and on albums.
Oh, I'm not questioning that he plays with them, but if you look at a list of who are the Rolling Stones, that guy is not on the list.
That's a shame. He's really good.
I'm sure he's good, but there's the official lineup of the band, and then there's the other extra people that they add on to fill out the sound.
Well, he lurks behind the scenes with the Allman Brothers Band, like I mentioned, Chuck Berry, Aretha Franklin, the Black Crowes, John Mayer, George Harrison... But there was something about him, even though his name isn't out there in the world, or at least it wasn't until we brought him up on the Flopcast. You're welcome, Charles.
Oh, yeah. We are breaking this guy out to the world.
And we must. And it's because of one of his solo albums.
Okay.
He has a solo album that sounds suspiciously like a Flopcast segment.
Oh. He put out a record called... Chickens in the News? What do you do?
Boy, do I wish. That would be pretty fantastic. He's got a holiday album called What's in That Bag.
Oh, that's very close to a Flopcast segment. Sure.
Mm.
Wow. Okay. Wait, what year did this happen? Because are we suing him or is he going to sue us?
He's probably going to sue us because this album came out in 1998.
Okay. He was first. It's possible I've seen this guy live. If he was on the Rolling Stones tour in 1989, the Steel Wheels tour, then I did see him perform live.
In that case, you did.
Sure. I can't say I remember the keyboardist specifically. Do they at least let him be up on stage? Because U2 has that secret keyboardist that hides under the stage.
Yes, they let him be up on stage.
U2 has a guy under the stage playing all the keyboard parts. They hide him underground like a troll. This guy's up on stage with Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
All right. Good for him.
And in more recent times, he's known for his environmental activism. He's the tree man. And there is a documentary out about him.
Does he live in a tree? Is this one of those guys that lives in a tree?
No, he does not live in a tree. He does a lot for the environment. So we put him in the limelight, Kevin, for National Whatever Day.
We did it. Happy birthday to Charlie Floppo, or whatever his name was.
And it only took until he turned 70 for us to notice he was there.
All right. We did it. We're heroes. Let's move on.
Yeah, I feel really good about this.
I think we were just going to do another random show.
I think we're off to a good start with that, then.
We are. And we're just going to put the old supercomputer to work once again, generate some random numbers, turn to some random pages in my random books, and we shall discuss whatever comes up.
I'm ready.
It's taken all the thinking out of doing this podcast, which has been a huge relief to me. So I've got the TV book, I've got the movie book, I've got the 80s music book. You pick. What order are we doing this in? What's up first?
Let's start with the 80s music book.
The 80s music book. We've been playing with this book all year. The book is Ranking the 80s, and it has every single from the 1980s on the pop charts. Every single is ranked in a giant list based on its chart performance. And there's all kinds of other stats and facts and figures in this book. Fun book to flip through if you're a 80s chart nerd like we are. And we're going to have the supercomputer pick a number between 1 and 4,168. Because that's how many singles are covered in the book, which means it gets pretty obscure.
Yeah, that's very true.
You get into the 3,000 rankings. These are songs that did not perform particularly well, and a ton of songs that I guarantee we don't even know. That Charlie, what's his name, probably played keyboards on most of them. But let's go. We're going to song number... Okay, this is a deep one, Cornflake. 3,138. Are you going to try to guess again? I know that's your thing, is you like to guess which song we're going to talk about.
Guess a single from the 80s. That could be what? What did you say? 3,188, did you say?
3,138.
Okay. That's going to be a really, really deep one.
Okay, I've found the song, and I will say I do not know this song.
Okay.
So good luck.
Got to put on my 80s thinking hat for this.
It finished just ahead of a song by David Bowie called Cat People.
Which I have no idea what that is either.
Yeah, I wish we'd landed on that one, though. That sounds better.
I'm trying to think of a song that I maybe only ever heard in the 80s once or twice.
Or not at all. Which makes it even tougher.
I need to guess a song that I have some awareness of. All right, well, I don't think I can land on the title of the song. But I am going to guess that it was a super obscure song by Tears for Fears.
It's not Tears for Fears, but not a bad guess. I'll give you some hints. This song is from 1981.
Oh, I was doomed. I was never going to get it then.
It peaked at number 65 on the charts, so this song did not even crack the top 40. Casey Kasem never discussed this song on the radio. Let's see if you can get the artist at least. This is a classic rock band, a prog rock band, if you will. They are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so they're more known for their 70s stuff, I think. But they did have a couple of bigger, like, top 40 songs in the 80s.
There's no way you're talking about Rush.
Not talking about Rush, but you're in the neighborhood, though. That is prog rock from the 70s. Now, we're talking the Moody Blues, who had a couple of legitimate 80s hits. Your Wildest Dreams was the big one, remember?
Oh, yeah.
That was big. That was like a top 10 song. They had another one I remember called I Know You're Out There Somewhere, which sounded almost the same.
Yes, very, very similar.
Yeah, and a couple more.
They had a recipe for success, and they used it.
Managed to squeak out a couple more hits in the 80s. But this song is called Talking Out of Turn, which peaked at number 65, and I do not remember it at all.
I have no recollection of this either.
Talking Out of Turn. Because it stumped both of us, I'm going to see if I can look it up right now. Okay, I just looked up Talking Out of Turn by the Moody Blues, and I guess they're showing their prog roots at least a little bit here, because it looks like it's like 7 minutes long.
Yeah.
That's a prog band for you. All right, I don't have 7 minutes, so I'm not going to listen to this thing now, but who knows, maybe we'd love it.
Unlikely, especially you. It's
highly unlikely. I mean, I tolerated their 80s stuff. I was not really a fan of their earlier prog stuff.
I think I went through a brief phase around first grade when the Moody Blues was my favorite band. We had a bus driver that year. Bus 256, I remember. That bus driver was always playing those Moody Blues songs.
Your school bus was 256?
Yeah.
How many school buses were in your town? It went into the hundreds?
Way too many. We each had our own bus, Kevin.
Is there a book like this 80s book just ranking all the school buses in your town? Because that is a massive number of school buses to keep track of. No, man, when I was a kid, like my grade school, there were like 12 buses, I think. And they were numbered 1 through 12, approximately. Except for some reason, they broke into two different buses. There was a 5A and a 5B. And I never learned why. It freaked me out.
That's weird. All of our buses were in the 200s.
Oh, okay. They started from 200.
And they didn't even start from 200. I think they started from like 250 and went through 270. Wait,
why did they make it so complicated?
I don't know. I have no idea. All I remember is I was stuck on that stupid bus 256 and all of my friends were on bus 264 and it was a real bummer.
You're trapped on bus 256 and you're just listening to prog rock the whole way.
Yeah, it was the worst.
Just tearing down the road.
Listening to prog rock.
Suffering through some Jethro Tull the whole way.
Yeah, that sounds like my elementary school experience.
All right, well, before any more deep emotional scars are unearthed, let's move on. How about at random, are we doing what's left, TV or movies?
Movies.
Movies. Let's go to the movie book, which I think we've only done once before. We found that weird arcade movie last time. It was like a Tron ripoff thing.
Almost Tron, the movie.
Which apparently that movie is on YouTube. We can watch the movie, if we dare.
I might get to it after listening to that Moody Blues prog rock song.
Okay, I've got the Video Movie Guide from 1996. It's a big fat book just full of movies. All right, there's like 1,100 pages in this book, and we are going to pick a page at random. Right now, the supercomputer has selected page 2. Wow.
Page 2.
This is practically as early in the book as you can get. I gave it between 1 and 1154. It randomly selected page 2.
Which thankfully is not the table of contents.
Nope. No, the numbering starts with the actual movie listings. There are movies on page 2. This book is divided by type of movie, and evidently the first section is action-adventure movies, because that's what we have on page 2. There's a whole bunch of movies here. But, you know, the one that's catching my eye, because I remember this movie coming out, although I never saw it, from 1988, Cornflake, do you remember Action Jackson?
Yes.
You do? Oh, no. Have you seen this?
No, not in full. But I do remember people talking about Action Jackson.
If you've even seen parts of it, you've seen more than I have, I think. Action Jackson. I definitely remember seeing ads for this. This was Carl Weathers. Carl Weathers, who was Apollo Creed in the Rocky movies.
Oh.
And then he's, I don't know the character's name, but he was in The Mandalorian as well. He's like the guy that sends the Mandalorian out on one of his bounty hunting missions at the beginning.
Oh, him.
Yeah, that dude. Because I remember being very excited when I was looking at him. I was like, wait a minute, is that Carl Weathers? And yeah, it was. And then he was in Arrested Development also, playing himself several years back. It was very funny. I never saw the movie. 2 stars. It's rated, which I guess it could be worse. A maverick cop, played by Carl Weathers, is on the trail of a corrupt auto tycoon. Unfortunately, Action Jackson is a gab fest, punctuated by not-so-hot sex scenes.
Wow. Wait, how do you mess up a sex scene?
A gab fest, punctuated by not-so-hot sex scenes. That's Action Jackson? All right.
That is the most unusual description of a movie I have ever heard.
Let's see. There are a couple of good stunt scenes, though. Rated R for violence, drug use, simulated sex, nudity, and profanity. Well, see, that sounds pretty good. When you break down all the features that got it that coveted R rating, you know, they hit everything that people like.
Yeah, the whole must not be as good as the sum of its parts.
I guess not. So Carl Weathers is the star, so he's the maverick cop, I guess. The corrupt auto tycoon is Craig T. Nelson. That's Coach. Remember Coach, the sitcom Coach?
Yes.
Yeah, that guy. He was also star of Poltergeist. He made a bunch of movies, but then I think he's best known as Coach. But here he is. He's the bad guy in this movie. Corrupt auto tycoon. Vanity is in this. Vanity.
What else is Vanity in?
The Last Dragon.
Ah.
Plus, she was one of Prince's girls, you know.
That's how I know her.
Vanity's here. Sharon Stone was in this. This was kind of before she was super famous.
I was going to say, is this one of those movies that she brings up from her past or no?
Is Sharon proud of Action Jackson? I couldn't say. But yeah, here she is. Now, the name Action Jackson, that means something totally different to me. Because, you know, when I was a kid, I had all the Mego action figures. They made all the dolls of all the superheroes back then.
Yes.
From both Marvel and DC. Strangely, the same company was making all the superhero dolls. But they also had a line of action figures called Action Jackson. And it was just a generic guy. You just get this little doll of a dude, and then they sold all kinds of accessories and stuff. You'd buy, it was like a Barbie doll for boys, essentially, because you'd buy all kinds of different little outfits to dress him up in.
That's neat.
They'd be like, now he's in the army, you know, or now he's a football player. Now
he's very generic.
Now then. He's a scuba diver. Yeah. Then this movie came out. And I was, oh, Action Jackson. But no, it has nothing to do with the Mego dolls. They went a different way. It's Apollo Creed. It's Carl Weathers.
That's kind of a shame. Because when you describe the Mego dolls, I think it would be really cool to have a movie about them.
It could have just been a movie about a generic guy changing into different outfits.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd watch that. Punctuated by not so hot sex scenes. That's what you're looking for?
I would watch Mego dolls having a gab fest. Yes, I would.
All right. Well, it's 2 stars. I've gone this long without watching Action Jackson. I think I can hold out for the rest of my life and just avoid this thing. But who knows? Maybe we'd love it. Would you watch this movie? Have I piqued your interest in Action Jackson?
Nah, I think I'm going to continue to get my Carl Weathers from The Mandalorian.
There you go. Or from Rocky. He was in, I guess he was in the first 4 Rocky movies.
Nice.
Didn't make it through part 4 with Dolph Lundgren. Then it was all over. Let's go to the TV book just to wrap up this extra stupid round of random talk. We have the complete directory to primetime network and cable TV shows 1946 to the present. And by the present, they mean like 1995 or whenever this book came out.
That's an important distinction.
This is a giant book of TV shows, including just super obscure stuff that nobody remembers. Let's see what comes up this time. The supercomputer is sending us to page 1,157. That is almost all the way to the end of the list.
Wow, our luck tonight with these numbers.
This will be late in the alphabet. We're going from the very beginning of the movie book to the very end of the TV book. Page 1157. Oh, yeah, we're in the Y's. We're late into the letter Y at this point. And this has some shows I've never heard of. Young Mr. Robin from 1951. Don't know that one. Jane Seymour was on that? That can't be correct. That must be a different Jane Seymour. She wasn't making TV shows in 1951.
No.
The Young Rebels from 1970. I don't remember that. Although one of the stars was Louis Gossett Jr. Hey.
Neat.
Just saw Lou Gossett Jr. at Dragon Con last year. That was the one panel I went to that I wasn't on. I made a point of going to see Lou Gossett Jr. speak because, wow, that was a treat. But I had no idea about this. The Young Rebels. Let's see. This series was supposed to allow the youthful social rebels of the late 60s and early 70s to relate to the American Revolution. What?
That's weird.
So this was a period piece. This was a show set in the Revolutionary War era.
I have no recollection of this.
No, well, this is, the show is from 1970. All right, well, there you go. There's a show that I'm guessing no one has seen in half a century. The Young Rebels. See, I should have pushed my way to the front of the line at the Lou Gossett Q&A.
So you could have asked about the Young Rebels?
Yeah, just cut everybody off who wanted to talk about Watchmen. And Enemy Mine and all the other cool stuff. Powers of Matthew Starr. Everything that we know Lou Gossett Jr. for. Iron Eagle. I'd say, everybody shut up. We're talking Young Rebels. And that's it. I would have been shown the door.
You might have been shown several doors by that point.
The other show on this page is The Young Riders. And I do remember this show, though I never saw it. This is one of those things where they make a show based on a movie, but it's not an official adaptation. They just kind of rip it off. This, I'm guessing this was inspired by Young Guns, that like Brat Pack Western movie.
Yeah.
And then suddenly there was this TV show, The Young Riders. which I think was kind of the same thing. Oh, Stephen Baldwin was on this one. They got a Baldwin brother.
Nice get.
Melissa Leo was also in the cast, and she certainly went on to bigger and better things. All right, this was about the Pony Express. I did not see this. I saw Young Guns, the movie. I liked it. That was like Emilio Estevez and Lou Diamond Phillips and Kiefer Sutherland
right.
in the Old West. I didn't see Young Guns 2, though. I saw part 1. I did not see 2. And part 2 was the one with the Bon Jovi music.
And the Bon Jovi music is all I remember from
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Bon Jovi, Blaze of Glory. That was for Young Guns 2. But I was out by that point. I don't think Bon Jovi was involved with the Young Riders. They probably had to settle for, like, White Lion or something. They had to go down a level for the TV version. Anyway, there's some shows from the bitter end of the TV book.
Wild.
We learned a little something here tonight. Something stupid.
This show has been chock full of obscurity.
Well, you know, this is what happens when we just leave the whole show up to chance. And we did it again. Cornflake, I think that'll do it. How about we just stop the madness? Get us out of here.
Okay, I can do that. We got to let people know where to find us on the internet. We are at flopcast.net, facebook.com/flopcast. Our Twitter handle is @flopcast. And we're on Instagram, the_flopcast. Over on Apple Podcasts, you could leave us a rating and or a review. We always love it when you do. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Oh, Sponge Awareness. That's who did the music for the Young Riders. I forgot.
It was you guys?
Yeah, they paid us $4.
Four whole dollars.
That was a big payday. Cornflake, thanks for another random edition of the Flopcast. Everybody, thanks for hanging out with us once again. And of course, be safe, be kind, and especially be silly. And we'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
If you were a monster kid growing up, if you enjoyed Saturday mornings watching Monster Movie Matinee or staying up all night watching the midnight feature, then Monster Attack is the podcast for you. We not only look at classic old monster movies, we share our experience growing up as a monster kid. Join us every Monday for Monster Attack.
Cornflake, it's the secret after show. What you got?
I have a taco with googly eyes.
Okay. That's good for the podcast.
I gotta tell you, all this time I was talking to you on the show, I've had this taco with googly eyes on a card.
All right. Can't beat that for an audio medium like this.
Well, there is an audio component to this taco with googly eyes. He talks.
Oh.
You gotta press a button, but he talks. Here, I'm gonna hold it up nice and close to the microphone so you can hear.
You have a talking taco.
I do have a talking taco.
Well, let's go. What are we talking for then? Let's hand the show.
Let's listen to the taco.
We should have done this for the main part of the show, but at least for the after show, let's just hand things over to the talking taco.
Okay, here we go, Mr. Taco. What are your thoughts?
Just in case you were wondering, you're great. Was that cheesy?
Oh, no.
Well, how very complimentary.
One thing I just learned, I hate the talking taco.
Really? Well, you may not like him, but he's my new best friend.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.